Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome to episode 99 of Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. This week's guest is the wonderful Carrie Adloyd. This is really good fun. I am now on tour with my new show, Happy Now. It would be terrific if you like these podcasts, if you would come along and see me live. I prepare a lot more for my tour shows than I do. I know what I'm going to say, at least, in them, which I don't always know in the podcast. It's starting up. It will be in London from the 11th to the 13th of February at the Leicester Square Theatre. The Bloomsbury dates at the end of the tour have now been cancelled, which is when I was going to do the DVD because the theatre is full of asbestos. So no one's allowed to go in there. And there may be another London date added, or I might just do the DVD on one of the tour shows. We're going to find out. So these might be the only chance to see it in London. Also in February, I'm going to Sheffield, Leeds, Liverpool and Salford, though Salford is already sold out, as were Leicester and Sutton Coldfield. So do book ahead. They're all getting quite close, these February ones. So there may not be tickets left unless you book fairly quickly. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoy this penultimate podcast of the series. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has just put Stuart Lee's toothbrush up his urethra. Is Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Yes, hello. Welcome to the show. Hello. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as some of the cooler youngsters have started calling it. I was hanging around at... should really try and think of some cool places before I start. There was the Winter Wonderland. I was hanging around at the Winter Wonderland. I was hanging around at the Climate Change March in Trafalgar Square. And they were calling it Rahulastapa. So that's what they have been doing. And yes, Stuart Lee, if you were listening last week, you'll know that Stuart Lee foolishly left his toothbrush in the dressing room on the sink. I think someone has told him about the fact that I've definitely put that in my anus. Well, you just would, wouldn't you? He put it on a shelf this week, but I thought, that's not enough for me. It was up high, and I'm small, but I could still see it. I'm kind of a little bit zoned out because my daughter's not very well, and I've been up all night caring for her. She got very hot. That's bad. It's bad when babies get very hot. She was all pink this morning. It was terrifying. I've had quite good fun with her before she got ill, and I went to play with soft play with her this week. Have you ever been? It's amazing. I never went to soft play when I was a kid because I don't think they had soft play in the 1970s and 1960s when I was little. We had bouncy castles, but my mum wouldn't let me go on them because they were dangerous.
The first time I went on a bouncy castle was when I was 21 years old. Seriously was. It's not even a joke. I had a ball, I was snogged a future editor of the Erotic Review. I don't think that snog was what sent her down her career path, though. It's kind of quite difficult to snog. You just end up banging teeth. It's not a good place to do that. So it's very exciting. So it's worth all the snot and the soiled nappies and staying awake all night, because you get to go and play in a pit of orange and yellow balls which have just diseases of other children. I now realise the downfall of them, so I did that. Also this week, the week that we recorded this, it was the 13th birthday of my blog, Warming Up, which I've done every single day for 13 years. Just insane. Yeah, I don't think it is worth a round of applause. I think it's like, what? Thinking, what the hell have you been doing? Every day, Christmas, birthdays, Christmas Day, someone's died, I've still done it. What the fuck is wrong with me? But even so, I have nothing for my opening monologue, even though I've got 13 years of that. So we're going to crack straight on and introduce today's guest, who is probably best known for appearing in Hello Panda. That is why we're all here to see her. It's Carriad Lloyd, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome Carriad Lloyd. Come on in, sit down, welcome. Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. You've used that before.
Hello Panda?
Yeah.
Have I? With one of my other guests?
Yeah.
Have I?
Yes.
With Sarah Pascoe?
With Sarah Pascoe.
Oh, wow, yeah, good.
He's also in that film.
Yeah, she is. It looked like an interesting film, but maybe that's why I realised it was...
But you said you were going to watch it when you interviewed Sarah.
I didn't watch
you
it.
You haven't watched it. It is available to download on iTunes, guys.
Is it?
Hello Panda, but H-A-L-L.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, hello.
You have a bigger part than Sarah Pascoe had.
I do, but then my husband directed it. Oh, yeah. That's why.
Were you married when he directed it, or was that how you met during
Hello
Panda?
No, we weren't married when it happened. Okay, and yeah, Lee Kern is in it as well.
Yeah, it's good.
And Neil
Edmund. Tell us what it's about for the people who didn't see the Sarah Pascoe one.
It always sounds really bad when you describe it. But
why I'm drawn to it.
I can't believe you made Sarah talk about this as well. And as I listened to it, I thought, oh, that's good. I won't have to talk about that. It's about a man who works in a zoo, and he's in charge of getting the pandas to mate. And genuinely, I don't know if you know this about pandas, like the reason they're going extinct is their fault.
Yeah.
So like they're carnivores, but they choose to eat bamboo. like that's fact. They're meant to be carnivores. They choose to eat bamboo. Bamboo has no nutritional value. So like they have to eat tons of it to get anything. It's why they're really sleepy all the time.
Yeah.
And then they're so sleepy and tired, they don't want to have sex with each other. That's just why they're going extinct. That is true. That's why every time one of them is born, everyone's like, oh my God, it happened. Because they are like, we just don't want to, I'm tired. So it's about a man who's trying to get the pandas to mate, but he's in love with a girl who works in the Mothitarium.
Okay.
It's me. I worked with the moths. And it's about, it's a metaphor. So he has to wank off a panda to try and get...
To win you.
To try and get the... No, not to win. To try and get the pandas to mate.
Okay.
But the panda talks, and the whole time the panda is like, dude, she's not into you. Yeah. Like, I'm not into Shishi. Like, yeah. You can't make people fall in love with you.
Yeah.
It's what it's about. It's a really nice little film.
That sounds good. Well, I'm going to watch it, definitely.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
When you said Mothitarium, I imagined a place where Stephen Moffat was kept. That's how my brain is going to be working, unfortunately, during
Stephen
this
Moffat
sleep
is in
deprived.
It. He's in it as
is
well.
He in
yeah.
It?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's good. It'd be good to have, like, an enclosure of a zoo with just Stephen Moffat's loads of. He's the producer of Doctor Who. I thought that would fly well with my audience, but I think there's some Jane Austen fans in today who are confused about the Doctor Who based references.
That doesn't cross over, Jane Austen and Doctor Who.
There's no crossover. I think but she, there is, because I want to call her an Amelia Pond. That's how bad I am. The one who's just copped dead, but probably isn't dead. She's probably come back alive again. What's her name in Doctor Who? Come on, you're Doctor Who! Yeah, there.
Who?
She is friends with Jane Austen.
Yes, they did a Jane Austen episode. I haven't seen it, but I did see those.
I know it's
episode.
Rubbish. It's for children. I pity my fans. So
I don't mind Doctor Who, but it scares me. I can't watch it. It's too scary.
I'd find it too confusing. I might just be too old for it. Everyone was going out brilliant. The one I watched last night was when he was in a little.
Bless you.
He's in a little magic castle that turns around and he stays
Spoiler
there.
Spoiler alert! They might be
He stays
be
there for a
it.
Billion years and hits a hole in a wall and it's. childish. Rubbish. It's rubbish, but everyone's going, this is the best episode of Doctor Who ever.
I just find it too scary.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really easily scared.
Are you?
So, yeah, my husband's very into Doctor Who.
Is he?
So he watches it and I have to leave the room.
Which is the scariest Doctor Who monster that has scared you away from
Well,
Doctor Who?
I tell you what, it was the first one I ever saw,
yeah.
Which was in the 80s, and if you're a massive Doctor Who fan, you know exactly what it is. It was a Sylvester McCoy one.
Was it the one with the licorice all sorts?
No, it was Cats with Laser Eyes.
Oh, okay.
Which I met a Doctor... If Doctor Who people would instantly go, oh, it's... But I can't remember what it's called. Sorry.
The Cats with Laser Eyes. By the time they got to that series, it probably was just called Laser Cats.
And it was scary.
They're probably called Lightning Cats.
I'll get in so much trouble for not remembering what it's called. No. But
they scared you.
They had laser eyes and they filmed it because it was like, you know what TV, like when they film stuff, it looked exactly like Your Road.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't look like Your Road anymore when you watch TV, but then it was like, my God, that's my road. And they had houses and this cat came out and laser eyed somebody and they died. And I was like, that could happen. So I think it was like the first time I saw something. But I'm someone, I cried at Shaun of the Dead. I thought it was so scary. I literally, in the cinema, you know, you have like where you put your feet. I got down in the footwell like this and said, I want to go because I was so scared. Because that was filmed around Finchley, which is kind of where I grew up in North London.
Yeah.
And so that was even scarier.
Is it just if the thing is in a location you can identify, as long as it's in space or something?
No, it's anything. Scared of stop motion animation.
Morph.
No, that's okay. Soft. I'm talking about spiky stop mo. You know, Eastern European 1980s stop mo. Yeah. Jaggedy. Anything jaggedy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do know. Yeah. Exactly what
and
you
it's
mean.
Like when I was a kid, you'd be watching Channel 4. And do you remember they used to show like short films on Channel 4? So like about 5 to 8 before something came on.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, just what's there's a and they'd be like, and now on Channel 4, the 1988 classic Sandman by Polish director. And you'd think, oh, okay. And then I'd sit there. Crying. It's so scary.
Well, yeah. I better ask you this question now. Have you ever seen a ghost? I imagine you haven't, or you'd be too scared to...
No, I have had weird experiences.
Have you? What weird experiences have you had?
Well, yeah, I have had weird experiences. God, here we go. I wanted to not sound crazy. It's too late, isn't it? Lots of weird things have happened, but the one that I suppose... Okay, I have obviously Welsh family.
Yeah.
Carrie Lloyd, and we stayed in this like, converted farmhouse in Wales when I was like, I must have been about 8, and my cousin was with us, so my like the boys took the proper room and I had to sleep downstairs, which I'm still pissed off about, as you can tell. And I woke up in the night and I remember thinking, why has my brother come downstairs and opened every single drawer? And someone was opening all the drawers and they were moving all the cutlery.
Yeah.
Because I was sleepy, I was like. I just thought, oh, my brother's so annoying. So I just went back to sleep. But I did, and then they opened the dishwasher, slamming it, and I remember saying like, "Tom, shut up." And then in the morning, my cousin came down and said, "Why were you crying?" I said, "I wasn't crying." He said, "I heard a girl screaming and crying all night." I thought, "Why didn't you come downstairs?" and so then I said, "Well, why did you come down and open the drawers?" And they said, "We didn't." And then
were the drawers open?
No, they weren't, to be fair.
Do you know what that was?
What?
That was a dream.
And then we spoke to my aunt, and my aunt said...
In your dream, you started screaming and crying when you were asleep. It's very easy to explain
that. Oh, my God. You have ruined a great family story. It was a dream. I know, I have had lots of weird experiences. I've never seen anything, but I have had lots of very strange things, yeah. I know there's lots of dead people in my family.
Yeah, there's their own minds.
Like direct family. There's
what,
lots
like
of
the Munsters? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of weird, yeah. But no, I've never seen an actual ghost, and I think I'd just cry and put my head in my hands and go away.
So. Yeah. I think most people would do that. It would be scary if they actually existed. It would be terrifying. But luckily they don't.
Do you not believe it at all? Like, have you never had a thing where you've thought, oh, that's a bit weird?
Well, a little bit, well, you know, but then most things get explained. I did talk about one recently where I was in Amsterdam and there was just a noise in the kitchen. Every time I turned the lights on, there was no noise. And the minute I went back to bed, it would start again.
Oh,
and it was like a really weird metallic screeching noise. But then in the morning, I realised there was a crisp packet and a mouse had gnawed through this crisp packet, but that's... Which is quite scary because it might have still been a ghost mouse. That is why. Because how did the mouse know there were crisps in that packet? It was a sealed packet.
Well, because he can
read. Only know if it's a ghost. But then if it's a ghost, why did it not, when it just passed through the crisp packet? And why was it that bothered about the crisps? It was his, can't eat
you
its
You can't
dead.
Explain it all.
You can't. No, certainly a Dutch ghost might operate by different rules.
Do they
rules.
Different?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, Dutch ghost. Yeah. Oh, completely like, different. Completely. You're a Dutch ghost. No, you want
Welsh
to get someone
ghosts
in.
Ghosts are different as well, I imagine.
Okay.
I'm only racist in the afterlife.
That is the safest place to be racist, probably. I imagine all the racists are all together.
Yeah. Like, well, no, I think they'll stick with their own.
Anyway.
Because we're all from Africa originally.
Well, how you define the word Africa, I suppose, isn't it? Yeah. It was all one big country. It wasn't really called Africa.
Well, it wasn't called Africa when monkeys lived there, but it still was Africa.
Okay.
I'm not talking about Europe. What's it called? See,
there's a word for it, isn't it?
When no, but I know it. Do a routine about it, but because I'm not. What's it called?
Pangaea.
Yeah. Pangaea. I'm not talking about Pangaea. That was different.
Oh, okay.
That was when all the world was together in one mass.
Yeah.
And then the tectonic plates. You learn stuff in this show as well. And so they all went. You know, things happened.
Yeah, they moved away.
That happened. The BBC will probably screen this as like a
Reef lecture. This is the new Reef lecture, everybody.
There go. Oh, that one goes over there. And if you push them all back together again...
And yet you don't believe in ghosts.
I don't believe in ghosts, but I believe in Pangaea.
Oh, that's good.
I believe that South America and Africa once were joined together because it looks like they probably were.
Well, it looks like a ghost at your crisps.
It does. Good bit. So, Carrie Hatch.
Yes.
You have done a lot of things. You started out as an actor. Did you do anything before you were an actor? Did you have a proper job?
I was a temp.
Were you? What did you
do? I did loads of jobs. I was one of the... Because I wanted to be an actor, so I just did a lot of shit jobs. As a Christmas elf.
Oh, yeah? You'd be great at that.
Oh, I was so bad. I was so... Because now I'm happy because I'm much more fulfilled.
Yeah.
But when I was a temp, I was sort of like a cross between Darlene from Roseanne and Daria. I was like the most miserable, sarcastic person possible.
Nice.
And I worked at Selfridges with actually quite a few comics. And there's a train. Like they put the kids on the train. It goes around in a circle. And we just used to do awful things because it was just... You're just so bored.
How better say how awful, because what I'm thinking is really bad.
As I'm saying it. Oh, it's horrible.
Go on, what?
No, I don't think I
it
should
It can't
say.
Be as bad as what I'm saying, because I'm imagining some children are dead. And so are my audience, so you better explain what you did.
Oh, there were so many weird things. Like, so all the Santas, who were very nice people, they won't watch this.
They won't watch this, don't
they? All the Santas for the rest of the year are extras. So they'd say to you, like, oh, so what do you do? Well, you're waiting for a kid to come in. You'd be like, oh, well, I want to be an actor. Oh, have you been in Harry Potter? I have. And then you'll be like, all right, what did you do? Like, I'm the wizard behind Hagrid. And you're like, but he says it so proudly. And then there's one, he's like, have you done James Bond? You in a new, there's a new Star Wars come up, you done that? And you're like, no, I haven't. And then they would treat you like you weren't an actor because you hadn't done like big British films in their opinion. Yeah. And then we had like a fake wooden train set in the middle. Like there's all the toys are in the middle of the train, so they, basically the kids can look at it and want to buy it. And there was a toy wooden train and my friend made it look like there'd been a train crash and spelled out on wooden letters, spelled out 7-7, we'll never forget. Now, I can joke about that because I was around the corner in the bus, so I feel like I have slightly more of a sensitive issue. But
I don't think being around the corner means you're allowed to...
Oh, really?
I was around the corner, so, you know.
No, it was awful.
It was awful.
I saw it explode. And stuff like, because you're just so, you go mental and you have bells you have to shake all the time. And they shout at you if you don't wave your bells enough. And, but I was a temp for ages.
How much would I have to pay you now for you to come and be a Christmas elf at my house?
Oh my God.
For just
for
December.
You? I do
just
for you.
December.
Oh, for the whole of December.
I want to employ you for a month to just be in my house.
Why?
Being an elf.
Look, I'll do it for a day.
I think you'd be a good elf. And it would be nice to have a Christmas. I'd come in and go, there's my Christmas elf.
Hey, happy Christmas! Happy Christmas! Yeah. Who's excited? You have to do that all day.
Yeah. I would like that.
You'd have to pay me... What did I get then? I think I got like £7.50 an hour.
No, I can't
I'd want an increase. £20 an hour?
£20 an hour, okay.
It's a good Christmas job. I was a temp for ages, basically. So I worked in offices and I worked in shops. And I was a tour guide, bus tour guide with Sarah Pascoe.
Oh, yes.
Because we were living together then. And we used to do the same jobs because it was easy to get the train together. We were open-top bus tour guides. And just anything, basically. Worked in a college for ages.
Right. Was... You started out wanting to be like quite a serious actor, though, did you?
Yes, very much. Yeah. I wanted to do Chekhov,
yeah,
or Shakespeare or Ibsen. Those were like, or Tennessee Williams.
Yeah,
that was it. And I did. I used to do terrible, terrible fringe productions where like we did Chekhov and I was the grandma. Like, because it was, you haven't seen a lot of fringe theatre. That's quite normal that like a 21-year-old girl will be like spray painted grey hair to be the grandma because they can't get a proper old actress.
Yeah. I can't, because I think you always look so, there's always a cheeky glint in your eye. I just can't imagine you doing sort of serious drama.
No, well, I wasn't very good. I used to always get told off for being funny.
Yeah.
So I had this, there was this play about people who burnt to death, which is actually a very good play that my friend wrote. It was really good. And I had to be a maid in this one scene that was about the witch hunts and like a genuine true story of like when we were briefly Catholic and they burnt lots of Protestant people, vicars, and I had to come on and be a maid, and it was like classic, like I'd always be slightly too wobbly and I did an accent and I'd be like, oh, he's been to Berlin, you know, how will he survive? And they were like, Cariad, can you just deliver the line and leave? And I found that really hard. But yeah, no, I'd still love to do that. I'd still love to do serious theatre. But it got nowhere. Like, yeah. I was just bad and I had no confidence at all. And so that's why. But people would always laugh. So I started doing comedy because I thought, oh, maybe this is... Not because I wanted to do comedy, just because I thought, well, this is a bit fun on the side.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like at least this isn't depressing. And then as soon as I started doing comedy, I was much better at it. And it just moved much quicker. So
yeah.
But it is Sarah's fault, a lot of it.
Okay.
Because she was doing stand-up.
She was, yeah.
Yeah, so she Absolutely. Was the one who made me do it. Yeah.
Yeah. But you got into impro quite early, which, I mean, the things you do are incredibly complex. So I've seen Ostentatious and other things you've done, but Ostentatious, where you and five or six people, is it? In
six people? It's six a show, but there's seven in the group.
That's
yeah.
right, yeah. So it's you basically take a suggestion for a title from the audience and then improvise a Jane Austen story around that
so
from scratch.
Yeah, so as you come in, we give people, in fact, this very venue, you can come and see us on 20th of December for our Christmas show. We give you a piece of paper as you come in that looks like an old Penguin book, and people write down titles. And it can be Jane Austen puns, but it doesn't have to be. So we have had Mansfield Jurassic Park, Strictly Come Darcy, 50 Shades of Darcy, 50 Shades of Jane, Pride and Predator, that was a good one. Northanger Rabbi, that's my fave. So we just pick it out, and then we just, so it's not like Whose Lines Anyway Start Improv. We just pick out the title. Sorry, it's so weird. We did a show here last night, that's what I'm like, and we were here. And then we, improvise a comedy play in the style of Jane Austen.
I mean, that just seems incredibly difficult, because because there's six of you,
yeah,
and so you have to be able to work out where you're going. I mean, do you have like a guideline idea?
No, just,
they're all different.
Always different, yeah. So it's actually easier, I think, because I'm not a stand-up, traditional stand-up. I think what you do is much, because there's only one of you. So for me, it's like, well, there's six of us, so. For a sixth of the time, I get to stand over there and be like, oh God, what's happening? Oh God, what's Joe doing? Oh, okay, we should do that. So you kind of, the responsibility is shared.
Yeah.
So that's, I like that.
But it's like an hour-long show, right?
Yeah, it's an hour-long show. And really, it's storytelling.
Yeah.
So the two people will start the show and, you know, they establish a world and you start thinking, oh, okay, well, you know... that's his daughter, but she wants to leave and go to London, but he won't let her. Oh, okay, well, we need to make it harder for her to... You know, you just start thinking, well, what should happen next? And that's what all good long-form improv should be. You're just trying to think, what should happen next?
Yeah.
In the most satisfying storytelling way. And you're just working towards, okay, halfway through, you want her to have, you know, hit rock bottom. Yeah. And then you think, okay, she likes that guy, right? We need to make sure he's a good lover. How can we make that harder? How can we make her win and then tie it all up at the end?
Yeah. It's amazing. It's a really satisfying and brilliant show.
Thank you.
But it's just, I mean, the concentration required on... I mean, I find it hard to talk to people in this for an hour. And remember what they said. That's why I don't remember anything from any of the previous ones. So it's very well worth seeing. There is a DVD out on Go
there
Faster Stripe.
There is a DVD on Go Faster Stripe of a show we did here, Leicester Square Theatre. And yeah, we perform twice a month in London, and we also tour as well. We do Edinburgh. We've been doing it for 5 years now. It's coming to our fifth anniversary.
Did it take a long time to build up to be able to do that long form thing? We're doing like the little, because I mean, I always found when I started out and when people were doing impro, it was often quite. It was often like student groups, and it was often not very good. And so
it's so hard. The improv, like, this is when I get basic. The improv the improv scene has changed so much. So I started 10 years ago, and even in that 10 years, it's unrecognizable. When I started, there was like three groups in London, and they were all doing what's known as short form, which is like Whose Lines Anyway style. Oh, we're going to play this game. Oh, Richard doesn't know who he is. Oh, clap. Which is a great, you know, a great way of doing it. But then as I started, people started bringing over what's known as Chicago-style long form, which is what people like Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Will Ferrell, Steve Carell, like all of them, everyone from SNL essentially, studied in Chicago-style long form. So that's now coming over here and are sort of an English version. So I didn't do long form for quite a while. I started in short form. But now, you know, you can. There's so many classes teaching long form. But when there wasn't when I started. We had to teach ourselves, which is why we were quite bad at the beginning, to be honest with you. But I think improv gets such a bad rap because it's such a small scene. If stand-up was as small as improv and you saw one bad stand-up, an audience member would go, oh, I don't like stand-up.
Yeah.
But because stand-up's so big, you know, I could watch a stand-up and go, well, I didn't like that, but that doesn't mean... I won't say, I don't like stand-up. I'll be like, oh, well, I don't like...
Yeah. I understand. I'm like Marmite, apparently.
Yeah, I would
you
never
either,
say
you
that.
Either hate me or you haven't heard of me. That's what.
But with improv, because it's so small, I think people see one improv show and they go, oh, well, I didn't like that. I don't like improv. Whereas really, you just have to, like with all mediums, you have to see, it's like you have to see good improv and you'll like it. You have to see good stand-up. You have to see good sketch. And unfortunately, you can't police people doing improv. Like, I can't stop the bad people doing it.
You try.
I do. I teach classes. Okay, I teach to try and be like, guys, let's all get better at this. Yeah.
Well, Ostentatious is amazing, I have to say. Thank you. Go and see if you get a chance. And I'm amazed you tour, because I would have just thought the overheads of six people touring together would make it impractical. But
yeah, I mean, it is quite hard. But we... when we started, we played to a pub. We started in a pub around the corner of Leicester Square to 12 people.
Yeah.
And we had no... We were just doing it because we thought it was fun. And then we didn't realise how many people love Jane Austen. And I can inform you, it's way more people than like improv.
Yeah.
So when we do gig, we get people who've never seen improv. They don't go to comedy gigs, but they love Jane Austen. Mm-hmm. So it's nice in a way because you're sort of bringing them into stuff, being like, oh, hey, there's this other world.
Yeah.
People love Jane Austen, hardcore. That's what. So we sell out a lot of places.
That's good.
Thanks.
I'm going to do a show about Jane Austen next.
Seriously? There's a whole circuit. There's like a festival circuit of Jane Austen stuff. I have no idea.
I fucked Jane Austen's corpse. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah? That'll bring him
in. Well, no. Nobody fucked her when she was alive, so it'd be nice for her. Yeah. Poor lady.
George Osborne, you were telling me backstage,
oh,
came
I knew
to see
you were
the
bring
show.
That up. I said it backstage. I saw you write it down. I was like, oh shit. George Osborne came to see our show in Edinburgh. Came to see Ostentatious. I know, but it was. I was saying it was really hard because we have to. The cast give out the programs and slips because we feel we just explain it easier. So you are talking to the queue, and the queue sometimes think you're just ushers, so it's a bit weird. And I saw him, but I did that thing where you recognise someone but you don't know why. So I was thinking, oh, it's a comic or something. Oh, it's a producer. I actually thought it's a producer because he looks like slightly ascent, you know.
He looks like a kind of puppet from a Victorian freak show.
Yeah.
So you might have thought, oh, it's that puppet from
Or like somebody works
film.
On a channel or something, you know what I mean? Like that slightly industry thing where like, oh God, it's that man who's not funny but has loads of power. Remember to be nice to him. Yeah. So I sort of smiled and I was like, hello. And then as I was saying, oh, you just need to write a title. Oh, and I realised halfway through, I was like, oh, it's George Osborne. So I was like, oh, thanks so much, man. You just need to write a made up title of a Jane Austen novel. It doesn't matter. Well, you're right. And then walked off. And then Andy in the group, who is he's not right wing, but he's much posher than I am, and in his eyes I'm like Red Ken or something. So he was like, Carrie, I don't say anything, behave yourself, because I was like, I'm gonna say something in the show, I'm gonna make a rant about arts cuts. And but we were sold out. It was in the Udderbelly Cow, so it's like 400 people.
Yeah, amazing.
And I just had this... I was horrible because I did think, this is a chance. We could go on and we could, like, do something. Like, come on, guys. And I thought, oh, but 400 people haven't paid for you to do an unprepared rant about the arts cuts. So we just did a show. We did a show about a very rich, arrogant man who had to learn his lesson by giving his money away. And that's when this woman would fall in love with him. So we sort of did it. And then some people knew he was there. So the everyone writes down different titles. And we had about five titles that were George Osborne and the Arts Cards, which we didn't. We picked them out of the hat and we didn't get. But as I said to you, the worst realisation afterwards was I said to the gang, like, oh, we're the most suitable Edinburgh show for us for George Osborne. Like, it's our show. Because you do stuff in comedy, you think, oh, we're cool, we're doing fun stuff. No, you're doing shows that George Osborne wants to see.
He probably heard that they were giving out free pencils to write on the thing. That's probably what it was. Just trying to get that. I mean, I'm never going to explain that, but if you... And you can't find it on the internet, apparently, but there's a good reason I'm saying that. let me ask you an emergency question to get out of my suable. I mean, you know, the thing with George Osborne, he can probably just have me rubbed out, can't he? That's why he likes pencils so much. So it's...
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to Google it.
No one, try Googling, and all you'll find is me talking about it.
You spreading the one rumor.
It was. It's what I'm like. This is an emergency question from Tim Turner. That's very enjoyable. Richard Dawkins claims to have seen dogs doing a 69. What's the worst lie you have ever told to impress people?
The worst lie?
Yeah. Do you ever lie? I mean, the thing, it's a difficult question to answer because if you have lied, then...
This is why I'm not very good as myself. Because I'm extremely honest.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't lie very well. Like, I'm... If you're friends with me, it's I'm too honest.
Right.
So I don't really have a worst lie.
What's the most honest thing you've ever told?
Oh, no, awful. Just told people what I thought of them. Yeah. And that's why I do character comedy, because I'm not that funny when I'm me. I'm just very earnest and sincere and honest. And it's difficult. It's intense. It's like this. It's not always funny. It's uncomfortable. But so, yeah, I haven't told the worst lie. Like,
when you were a kid, did you ever lie?
No, I didn't do that. That was my friend at school.
Well, pretend it was you, and then this can be the worst lie you ever told.
Oh, that's how comedy works. Yeah. So, guys, my friend pretended that someone in her family had died to get off a bakery shift, which I always thought was the worst thing you could do. We worked in a bakery, and it was really boring, and she didn't turn up for a Saturday shift, and she rang in and said, like, her sister had died or something. But then she was like, I don't have a sister, so it's all right. And I thought, I don't think that's all right.
Not anymore. Yeah. But it's not really impressive. It's a difficult question. I'll ask you an easier question.
Sorry.
No, I'll ask you an easier question. What celebrity would you like to stroke your hair as you die?
David Bowie. I'm obsessed with David Bowie. Yeah, I did a 53-hour improv show in Canada. We do one here for 50 hours, and we start on Friday, we finish on Sunday. We don't stop. So you don't have a break. Like, you stay awake.
Yeah.
And, it's good. It's good. Obviously, some of it's awful because some of it is just people being like, what? And people fall asleep. My friend Donovan thought he was dying. He thought he'd died. He drank so much during the 50 hours, he woke up. And a man was dressed as a devil trying to make him do a scene. And he was like, just started screaming. But one in Canada, this guy dressed up as David Barry from the Labyrinth years. And I'm so like, that was like one of my first crushes. And he was so cool. He had a straw in his pocket and he kept saying, I'm drinking my suit, which I thought was the funniest thing ever. And so in the 53 hours, I played his wife. Like, we got together in the show. And halfway through, my brain broke. It felt like it broke. And I thought he was real. And I thought, I'm married to David Bowie. And I was on the stage and I was thinking, he's married. He's married to that beautiful woman. How am I going to... She's going to be so upset about this. He's just met me. And I was thinking, I'm going to be on the cover of Hello because... And my friend Paul put apples up his arms because he was pretending to be Aquaman. And he turned to me and said, I think I've got cancer. So then we both got carried off. Because we were like older improvisers were like, you're going through this. It's like
it's a recognisable condition.
Yeah, but it's like I don't do drugs, or I have never really done drugs. So for me, it's like, that's what friends have told me. Or like, when you take drugs, someone takes you away. It's like, it's okay, you're having a bit of a bad trip. Like, that's just the same thing. They're like, you're having a bad improvathon, you just need to breathe. But in my head, me and this guy, it's like we're ex-boyfriend. Because you're improvising, playing their partner for 53 hours. You think, we kind of went out. We had to climb a volcano together. We had to defeat a dragon. Like,
Are you sure you're actually married to your husband? Are you sure that wasn't just another impro thing?
No, he's definitely.
How would you know that all reality might? We might be improvising here. This might be.
Oh, don't. That's my worst nightmare. That's what I sometimes wonder: is any of it real?
Yeah, that's the danger.
So, because when you do it, because do you ever had a Ken Campbell?
Yes, I love Ken Campbell.
Oh, so that's where he's a guy who got me involved in a lot of improv.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he's the one, he went to Canada and saw them do this 53-hour show, and he came back and he was like, right, we've all got to do this 50-hour show. You don't know Ken, that's how he used to speak. And he was like a mad theatre, kind of just a brilliant wizard of a man. But he didn't tell us that in Canada, they often don't do the whole thing.
Right.
He was like, no, you've all got to do the whole thing, you've got to do it. So we all did the whole thing, went mental, because he said, oh, hour 36, you'll go through the Stargate, and that's when pure improv will happen. That's what Ken told us all. And then when the Canadians came over, they were like, oh, you're doing the whole thing. Well, maybe we should do that. We were like, you don't do the whole thing. Some of them do. But Ken got me quite heavily involved in improv. So I was doing it before, but and that's why we don't go to sleep. His big thing was like, otherwise, why are you doing it? You're just making it up. That's bullshit. You might as well do it the most extreme way possible.
He was nearly Doctor Who.
Yeah, he was. They said he was too scary. Yeah. And so they got his friend, Sylvester McCoy, to do it.
That was a mistake. They should have had.
Oh, he would have been amazing. He was such an amazing man, yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
But, terrifying. Really hard to work with. But also, like a pure genius, you know, like you're sort of, you just have to listen. And if you try and speak... It was quite hard sometimes.
No, he did amazing one-man shows.
Oh, amazing, amazing, yeah.
Yeah, saw him a few times. He's absolutely one of my heroes, especially now I've heard about how he, you know, got off with loads of young actresses as well. I didn't know about that at the time.
I didn't have that. I met him just before he died when he had very much mellowed. And he was still he still used to throw things at you and shout at you. He once called me carrier bag and told me to fuck off. Oh. We were doing a job on a cruise ship. We were improvising poetry and I tried to disagree with him. And he went, oh, fuck off, carrier bag. Yeah, that's what I mean. He was harsh, but he was right. I should have shut up. So, and then I went he's obsessed with dogs. Yeah. He used to go to his house, and I went to his house to walk his dogs. He had 3 dogs. One who had bitten a policeman and had got off, Ken defended his dog. Ken defended his dog because he'd bitten a policeman and he went to court and said, you can't put him down because they had known history. This policeman apparently had wound up the dog before. So Ken defended him and said this wasn't fair. The dog was under pressure. And the dog got off and Ken was like, oh, I'm a genius. But he found out that same day Princess Margaret's corgi had been in court for biting a servant. And obviously they can't put down Princess Margaret's corgi.
Right.
So they'd let her off. So because they couldn't then kill a dog, Ken's dog had got off because of Princess Margaret.
In dog courts. Are you sure this is really happened?
Not quite thing. Oh, you never know with Ken, actually. You never know. He had a dog that he said used to be owned by gypsies, and if you said shoes, it would go and get you some. He was a trained thief dog, he told me. Again, it might not be true, it's Ken.
So you've been doing, you do lots, as well as improv, you do lots of acting, and you're in lots of, you've done a lot of things on BBC Three.
I've done a lot of things, which is why I'm so sad they're taking it off the air. That is my income gone for a bit. Yeah.
But there's great stuff. So you've done your own show on, is that was it a one-off?
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was. It was a pilot, which they did nothing with. The Carrie Ad Show, which I've put on YouTube.
Is it up on YouTube?
It's not meant to be there.
I've only seen some little clips, but I didn't see it on YouTube.
I've secretly recently put it up there because they get rid of things on iPlayer. If I do this, they won't hear.
It's all right. They're not. There's no one from the BBC watching this.
It's on my YouTube channel. I know. Sorry, Rich. Yeah, I put it on YouTube because they make all these pilots. They put them on for a year and then they're like, well, now we have to take it off because we've got the new ones. And I thought, fuck you, carrier bag. I'm going to put it on my... It's a 15-minute pilot that I'm... Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just a pilot. The point of that story.
But there's all these... But they're great characters. I mean, you've done them in an Edinburgh show as well. Are they the same characters from an Edinburgh show?
They were taken from two Edinburgh shows. Yeah. So I did two solo shows in Edinburgh and then we kind of amalgamated and did a 15-minute pilot. I thought they were good characters.
They're great. There's a Zooey Deschanel kind of character.
Joey Bechamel.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's my hidden version. Yeah, Joey Bechamel. And then Jack Lecoq, who's a parkour expert. And Cockney Sam as well. Right. Those are my faves.
So where did you get your crazy ideas from?
I don't know, it's just from dreams and thoughts. Everyone says that sounds like, but I'm always like, depends on the character.
Yeah.
So where'd you get stand-up material for? It's like...
I just copy it off other people.
Sometimes it's because I can do a voice. So I have a character called Kitty Romford, who's a film noir lady who works in Asda, see? And that's just because I used to walk around the house really driving my husband mental, being like, say, you want some breakfast or what? And it's obviously not that good. And and so I just wrote, I thought, oh, it'd be funny if she worked in Asda. So she's in her head, she's in a film noir. And we filmed it like a film noir sketch. And then Jack Lecoq, again, because I could rap badly in French. So I tried to get a character that could rap in French. Just stupid things that you're like, oh. And then the Joey Bechamel, I actually really like Zooey Deschanel, and I would never do a character that's anti another female in comedy. But what I was trying to satirise was New Girl, because I watched that and I couldn't understand that people liked it. The advertising for it, you know, she was in a pop, like prom dress coming out of a box covered in straw, like, I just fell out of a box. And I just felt like if that character had blonde hair and a boob job and said the same lines, everyone would hate her and go, oh, she's awful. Yeah. But because they gave her brown hair and glasses and like a 1950s dress sense, suddenly that was okay that she was like, I just want a boyfriend. And I just found that really irritating.
Yeah. Well, that's a very funny sketch. And you've done this video, the bad blood.
The bad blood.
Bad blood video of like pastiche.
Yeah, there's a Taylor Swift
talking
song.
Talking of George Osborne.
Talking about, there's a Taylor Swift song called Bad Blood. And me and another comedian called Jenny Bead spoofed it about tampon tax. Don't, as I will come out there and put a tampon in you so that you understand what it's like, because 50% of the population have to deal with this. And don't fucking like it's disgusting. It's not disgusting. Thank you. Yes. I liked it. They were like,
it's a bit disgusting.
Yeah. The thing is, it's not like it's not disgusting. Like, trust me, when you have a really heavy period, I'll go there, and you're looking down at a toilet and it looks like a murder. You know when it's like fucking heavy and you're like, Jesus Christ. And you think, like, what the fuck, am I okay? Like, it looks like you've shot someone. Like, that is a bit, it's not disgusting. It's just like, that's how the human body works. Like, but when people are like, and I do a character called Sanitary Bag Lady. Right. Now, there's these, in really horrible old toilets, you get these paper bags. Do you know, like, some of you will know what I mean. Sanitary, but the paper bags, and there's a black and white woman on there, like, it looks like a Southern Belle, and she's like holding a dress like this. And I do this character called the Sanitary Bag Lady, and I put red lipstick all over my face, and I come out, and I'm like, I'm the Sanitary Bag Lady. Is anyone bleeding? Because I'm hungry. And when I do it, and I've got a massive paper hat, like a huge paper hat, so I look like the lady. When I do it, what really annoys me is that I get like, and often it's women being like, oh. And I look at one woman and I'm like, is it you? Are you bleeding? Can I smell you? And she's always so like, oh, like, which I can understand because I would probably react the same. But I just think, I don't know, someone's got to talk about it. We should just talk about, why not talk about it? Like, People do comedy about jizzing.
They do.
They do comedy about shitting.
Some comedians will do that. Yeah. They will go there.
So I just feel like, fuck you. I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So the bad blood one was, yeah, we did like, it was about the VAT on tampon tax, which has been reduced, but it's still 5%. And they recently said they're going to make that money go to women's charities. Like, oh, thank you so much. You're so kind. Now we can pay for the other women that the men hit. Thank you. Like, fuck you. Really, it makes me so angry.
Correctly so. But that's where good comedy can come out, that anger. I mean, it is unbelievable
when you stop
and think about it for half a second.
Yeah.
Yes, it's unbelievable.
And that there's no VAT on pita breads or Jaffa cakes or crocodile meat or, what is it, it's like canal boat towing material. Like, it's insane.
Pencils, there's no VAT on pencils and there never will be. Never will be.
I need to look this up. I need to know. So, yeah, and I wasn't this angry until, you know, you start looking into things. And definitely when I was younger, I would have been very much like, oh, no, I don't want to say that. How embarrassing. But you get older and you just think, oh, I don't care.
It's a great video. There's good production values on it.
Everyone says that. We filmed it in a day.
Did you? Yeah. I mean, you've used a bit of the original video.
It's all green screen.
Have you?
Yeah, it's green screen. No, because we couldn't use the original video. We'd be sued.
You're using the song, though, aren't you?
No, we're using a copy of the, like, you've changed the notes, so it's enough. That,
really?
Yeah, because it's Taylor Swift. We didn't want to mess with Taylor.
I think she'd let you off, wouldn't she? I think that
she hasn't retweeted it. Please feel free to tweet her. I tweet her every month. Hey, Taylor, we love you, but we hate the tampon tax. Retweet? No, she's not. She's not doing it. No. Yeah, it was amazing. I got like 25 female comedians. I shouldn't say that. 25 women comedians in a room, and then we filmed it on green screen. But the guy who directed it, Adam Brown, he's a brilliant director, has done music videos. So he did an amazing, the production job was all to do with him. He made it look very slick and exciting. But yeah, I just wanted to, like, the thing is, because I didn't get the sketch show.
Yes.
Like, I'm fine about it. But it does make you think, I guess with the podcasting, it makes you go, oh, fuck it. Well, I'll just do stuff myself.
Yeah.
So the reason that got made is I wrote on Facebook, I said, if I had a sketch show, what I would do this week was I would spoof Bad Blood and I would do it about this. And my name would be Heavy Flow. Because all the women in her video, in the original video, they've all got really stupid names. And loads of comedians, women comedians, were like, oh, my God, oh, my name would be, I can't remember any of them, Ender Omatrisis and, Massive Pad. And so, like, literally about 50 women were like, why don't you do it? So that's why we did it. We just thought, oh, okay.
But it's, I mean, I think you should probably just, I mean, I think that's what, BBC Three is now essentially is just the same as
exactly.
a YouTube channel.
And so, you get way more control. Yeah. Like, I had so many people telling me what I could and couldn't do when we did the pilot.
Yeah.
Like, comedy version of, like, exec saying things like, oh, you can't mention the word asparagus. People who watch BBC Three don't know what asparagus is. Like, genuine.
You can do that on this podcast. Yeah. They all know what asparagus is. They know everything about asparagus on this podcast.
So, yeah, I like it. That's what I'm going to do more of, just make it myself, because it's more fun. It costs you more, is the only problem.
Well, it does, but I think, you know, I think there will be ways to make that work out. I mean, it's so difficult. I think there's so many pilots that come up and they're great and then nothing happens. You know, but it's much harder these days.
Oh, it's so much harder these days. And I honestly think you can't complain. You just have to make stuff.
Keep
and that's
going.
What well, happened you're... at the start of my career. Like, nothing was happening, so I just did it myself. So... Yeah. I always say to people, just go and do it yourself, and then somebody will be like, "Oh, can we have that idea?"
Yeah.
So.
But you're doing a lot because I've been looking, watching. Well, you're in Peep Show. This last year's
in
Peep Show, which is very exciting.
Yeah. So exciting! I'm still excited about it.
It's a great one. We're only about halfway through the series as we talk, so we don't know what happens at the end. But the episode that went out this week with the dinner party was just one of the best episodes.
It was amazing, wasn't it? And that's the most I'm in it. To be honest, that's my main episode. Even having been there and filmed it, I still was still laughing at like the script. Such a good script.
Yeah.
I was a bit of a fan of Peep Show before, so the whole time I was there, I was like, oh, I'm in the flat. Jeremy's talking to me. Like, it was, and then a lot of the people who work on that show, like the other actors, haven't seen it for some reason. Like, they mainly have actors, not comedians, it seems. So they were like, oh, have you seen it all? And I was like, no. That's a callback to series one, that joke they've just done. Like, yeah, it was amazing. So I feel very lucky to be in that show, very lucky.
And I really enjoyed Murder. I didn't think I would.
No, no
I
one really, did. Everyone said that. I thought it'd be shit.
Murder was successful. It was really, really good.
There's a second series of that coming out. Yeah. I don't know if I'm in it yet.
But you're sort of playing, you know, celebrity. Well, they're sort of impressions, but not quite impressions.
When we did a taster where loads of comedians didn't do impressions. So, like, I'm sure I could tell you this. Like, Vicky Grover was Adele, but as if he was having... he was like an Irish nun.
Right.
And I did Justin Bieber as like a, you know, New York gangster. So, but then the BBC saw it and they were like, can there be some more impressions? So the producers are very good on that show, and they allow some comedians like me who can't really do sort of weird versions. And then there's some brilliant people like Luke Kempner and Liam Horacan who genuinely do the impressions. So I like it because it means you can have weird stuff, but it's not so weird.
So they've got an actual celebrity and they're trying to solve a crime. And there's impro in there.
There's a script. Is a script, but like I'm very bad at sticking to it. So yeah, an actual celebrity comes in and there's been a murder in Successville, but they interview. So I was Justin Bieber, Miley Cyrus, Darcy Bustle, and oh God, who's the other one?
You were the Girls Aloud girl, Georgie girl, weren't you?
No.
Okay.
With
Deborah Meaden, who was
oh,
that?
Oh, I was, sorry. Cheryl Fernandez.
Yes, you were her, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, that was her.
Yeah. That's you. Deborah Meaden was very funny.
She's amazing.
She could get her own series.
Oh, my God, she was so brilliant. And it's a total character. Like, off screen, she's really sweet and lovely.
Right.
And I was, you know, when you're sort of impressed, you think, you're a really good character comic. You just don't, you've used that skill for something else.
Use that skill to make huge amounts of money in business.
Yeah.
Maybe we should think about that. Maybe we should do 5 years of doing that and then come back and make our own TV shows with all the money we've made.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, all right, we'll do that. Well, we just sit in chairs and just say, I'm out to like other comedians.
We could do that. That could work. Yeah. I don't know, we could do that with some ideas. Good. The Vodka Diaries, is that also not going to be a series?
That's not a series either.
That looked really good.
It's good, wasn't it?
Yeah. And with Aisling being...
Aisling was in it, and Gwyneth Keyworth and Rosamund Hanson, who's in the one set in Nottingham that is...
Oh, yeah.
England
England.
This is England, sorry. Yeah. I was going to say England 9 to 5. And I was like, no way. And it was, again, like, you know, it was very fun, but didn't get serious. I've been in a lot of BBC pilots for BBC.
But that's good, you know, but you're in stuff. So all that needs to happen is one thing goes ballistic. And then they come back and say, oh, could you do a sketch show? You go, yeah, I could fucking do a sketch show. Yes, I could.
Yeah. No,
but
I'm not going to. Sketch is really unfashionable at the moment. But it's always in circles, isn't it? It's like there was a time when stand-up shows were unfashionable. There was a time when studio sitcoms were unfashionable. And then you get, you know, Miranda and you get Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle. And it's like things will come... I knew you were going to do that.
It's very hard to get things on because most things are panel shows now. That is the problem.
Because they're easier
to do and they're cheap to do.
They're cheap. And also, you know, people don't watch TV in the same way. And sketch shows aren't... Like Cardinal Burns was a very successful sketch show. Didn't get nearly as much people watching it as, say, some of the lesser good BBC Three sitcoms because people go, oh, I want to know what's going to happen. Like... So it's tough. So you can't complain. You just have to reinvent it for what's happening now.
But it's a big... I think it's a big shame, BBC Three. I mean, I don't really watch BBC Three, but it's a shame that it's going because it's this breeding ground for new stuff.
I think it's a real shame. And I know people make jokes about BBC Three, but it produces a lot of new comedy. And it also allows people to be crap, which is really important. Because if you watch the first series of Not 9 o'clock News or even like bloody early to... like. This is what people kill me for saying, like Monty Python. Sketch shows are hit and miss.
Yeah.
And any comedian, like, that's the primary school in sketch shows. There's so many people who've come through that. You know, like Little Britain, if you look at what Matt and David are doing now, like, they learn through doing the sketch shows, through doing the hit and miss stuff, to do the sitcoms, to write the show. So if you don't have a training ground, where will you get the future brilliant sitcoms from? Yeah. So I think it's backwards mistake.
Yeah. Well, I think they're just giving up on the idea.
I think they're just bending over backwards and being fucked by a Tory government and trying to please someone who's constantly fucking them. And I've been in that girlfriend and I'm telling you, he doesn't love you. So I feel like just leave him. Like, why do they... Oh, I know. But it's, you know, people love the BBC. It's a hugely important thing and hopefully it will stay. Hopefully. It will in some way. It just has to. It's so important. Do you not think it's important?
I do think it's important, but I think it's fucked. And
do
the
you?
NHS is fucked. And you know, because we're not gonna have a Labour government for another decade, and by then it's all gone.
It's a cheery comedy podcast. I don't have that. I'm much more, I feel like There's always hope. Things can be turned around.
I would just think with both those things, I think though you would think, and then I think 20 years ago there would have been things that people were just going, well, there's no way we're getting rid of that.
Yeah, that's
people,
true.
We're, you know, there would be people marching out the streets if you even suggested changing them a bit. But now people have become very self-centred and don't see the bigger picture in these things. Oh. You know, and believe, well, they'll go, you know, there's some in Richard Bacon, went the one next week, someone has, Richard Bacon once had polyps on his throat and then talked about on his radio show, and someone went on the Daily Express and said, I don't spend more than £130 a year on a licence to listen to him prattle on about ill health. And you kind of go, there were other things on the BBC. It's not like, that didn't cost 130 quid, yeah. That bit. That was, you know, that was, you could say that was free and the rest of the stuff. So, you know, it's incredible. Don't,
there's that thing that, there's a BBC Twitter thing they produce which shows you, like, the amount you pay is like 84p and the amount of channels you get compared to what you pay for one HBO show, like, and how much they produce. And I think, you know, people don't understand how much it costs to make a programme. And I think comedy's really tough because when a new comedy starts, people just love to pull comedy down in a way that, like, London Spy, new drama, people go, yeah, it's okay. First one was okay. New comedy, it's awful. It's awful. Why did they get a series? She's shit. You know, and, like, I had that when my show was shown. Like, people were like, what is this shit, At Lady Carriad? I'm sorry, At Lady Carriad. I've got to tell you, it's shit. And you're like, really? It's BBC Three. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Why do you care? But people feel very attached to their money, you know, their licence fee. I wish they'd charge to watch iPlayer. Why don't they do that? Like Netflix, why don't they do that? I'm so confused that I feel like that would raise them money.
Well, they're doing this thing, aren't they, where you can get some of the old shows.
For, oh, are they?
And they're doing a sort of Netflix of the BBC with some of the show. You can't get my stuff on there. And you never will. It's interesting. But I think with comedy, it takes a long time to, you know. But that's the because so many people are trying to do it and there are so many outlets to do it.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, a new comedy show for young people would come along every 6 months or a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you would just have to watch it. And
yeah, because there's nothing else,
and
there?
Then you would like it because it was, you know, usually, because it was usually quite good. But now there's those things come out so often that for something to break through and for a person to become a big star, I think is very difficult.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and all the comedy shows I really like, I hated the first time I saw them.
All of them?
So the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, you always go, this is awful. Yeah. And then like six episodes in, you're like, these people are my family. Like,
but the problem is the people who make the choice about what goes on aren't good enough at their job to go, this one will be the success. So that's why. So it's a big expense. In America, it's the other way around. So in America, they realise comedy is the way to make money.
Yeah.
You get successful comedy and then it makes millions and millions of dollars.
But if you go, I've been to LA and over there, they're like, oh, you guys have it so, you're so clever. The six episodes, the quality of what you like. I think it's so easy because I love American comedy. Yeah. I watch a lot of it. And all comics are like, oh, it's so much better over there. Like, they know what they're doing. And over there, they're like, oh, you've got Joseph London, you've got Peep Show, you like it's so incredible. Like, it's just easier.
Well,
to...
you do see that, you know, you cherry pick the better things. But that's quite. So when you went, I was going to ask you about that. So you go over to do the pilot season. And
I went, like, I like dipped my toe in. Yeah. I went over to sort of have a look.
Yeah.
Just because the improv scene is so massive over there.
Yeah.
So like when you go over there and you say you're an improviser, they're like, yeah, sure. And when you do it here, they still, some producers are like, oh, and how does that work? And who are they? And like, who's lying? And you think, fucking hell, come on. Like, how do you not know how it's working? So it's a bigger sell, I suppose. But it was very scary. I found it very intimidating.
Would you like to go and work in America?
Only, like, obviously, if the right thing, if there's an amazing project, But I didn't have that thing that some people have of, like, I burn very easily and I don't drive. So I found it really difficult. I was always hot and burn, and I was always stuck waiting for an Uber. And being like, and often quite upset, being like, I don't know how to get there. And so, it's a really hard city. Yeah. Like, you know, when, like, I feel, because I grew up in London, and some of my friends who come from the countryside, like, oh, when I came to London, it was so scary. Like, oh, for fuck's sake, like, what's wrong with you? And that's how I felt with LA. I was like, it's so big and scary, it's massive.
Yeah.
And meetings are just, it's a different
world.
And
there could be an earthquake at any moment.
Yes, there could be. You could. Why would you build a city where you're all going to die?
Just this adds a little frisson. It's exciting.
Simon.
If you had to go for a week's holiday with one of the puppets from Spitting Image, did you ever? You might be too young to remember Spitting Image.
I do remember it, but I only remember the Ian Hislop and Paul Merton puppet.
Okay. Well, it might be one of them. Which would you choose to go on holiday with? But remember, the puppet would choose the destination. You'd go on holiday with the puppet, the puppeteer, and the voiceover artist. But the puppeteer and the voiceover artist would not engage with you except via the puppet. So if you tried to talk to...
What if there was an emergency? What if
they wouldn't know.
What if I cut myself and I was like, I need you to help me?
The puppet would help you. They'd have to do it in character.
What if there's a car crash and I was like, I need you to hold the blood, you need to call an ambulance. They just don't. They go
say,
in there.
I can only, I'm Paul Merton, I'll try and help you with my rubber hand. That's what they'd have to say. If there was a car crash in Ostentatious, would you just, you would stay in character?
No, I wouldn't. I'm not mental. I'm not a psychopath. I would be like, sorry, guys, we've got to stop the show.
No, you have to carry on. People have paid
Well,
for
I can
that.
Only remember the Ian Hislop one, and that was quite small. And I like Ian Hislop, so I'd go away with him.
You were cheeky to Ian Hislop.
I was cheeky to Ian Hislop.
Have I gotten used to you, though?
It edited together a bit weirdly. Loads of my friends texted me and was like, he just reacted very badly to you asking him out. But in the studio, it wasn't like that. In the studio, it was like, ha, 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 how funny. Like, obviously, he's joking. But as the edit, but yeah, it was fine. Yeah.
He goes to the edit and says, make me look grumpy and angry.
He's such a nice man. Yeah. He's an incredibly nice man. So that's why I was teasing him. He was embarrassed because his wife was in. That's what he said to me. When my wife was in, I didn't want to say. I think I put him on the spot a bit. He's a really nice man.
And now you've said you want to go on holiday with his spinning English puppet.
It's like I've got a crush, isn't it?
It is.
I do have a bit of a crush. He's lovely. Yeah. He's so clever. He's such a smart man.
Yeah.
And he's nice. I have a bad story about Ian Hislop. Sorry.
I will try and get one. I bet Richard Bacon has.
I'd go away with the Ian Hislop puppet. Also because he's small.
Yeah.
So if there was a problem, I'd say to the puppeteer, you've got to put your hand in my... You've got to go in my hand in my pocket. And we're not going to talk about what happens in the pocket.
It's weird, but how many times have you been on holiday and there's been an emergency? I mean, that's the first thing you thought about.
I'm a sickly family.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'd be thinking of the good times I could be having... With the
puppet. We were sickly. There's always like someone has an asthma attack or something. So you always got who's gonna. There's a need an emergency, and I'd want the puppeteers to be able to help.
They wouldn't be able to.
Well, they're dicks then.
But it's just that's the. They've agreed to go on holiday with you.
Yeah, but even an emergency situation, they're not going to break their contract.
Then they'd have to pay for the holiday if they do that out of their own pocket.
Is it a TV show? Are they being filmed?
No, it's just you going on holiday with a puppeteer and a voiceover artist and a puppet.
Where do you think Ian Hislop would take me?
I don't know. That's the part of the... It's not the real Ian Hislop. It's the puppet of Ian Hislop.
Oh. What? So that puppeteer might not have any money.
Well, no. It all gets paid for.
Who's paying? Are you paying? You're paying.
I'm paying everyone.
How much are you going to give us, budget-wise?
Whatever it takes. Whatever the puppet decides. But the people running the puppet...
The moon. Ian Hislop wants to go to the moon.
He wouldn't do that. And the
How
person,
do you know? The puppeteer
person,
might...
The puppeteer would know that, isn't it? And it's not the puppeteer who would make the decision, it's the voiceover artist.
You just said it's the puppeteer. So the voiceover artist...
Well, the voiceover artist would talk, would do the talking. The puppeteer can point at the moon. Or can get a map and go... But the voiceover artist has
Didn't Steve Coogan used to do some of the voices on Spoon?
He did, yeah. So you could go on Hollywood with Steve Coogan, but you wouldn't be able to talk to him as Steve Coogan.
Oh my
which
God,
might be an
that.
Advantage. Might be an advantage with Steve being on holiday and Steve Coogan. So it might be the only way you'd be safe.
He can't... He's done this show, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has done this show.
Is he nice?
I've known him for... I've known him for a long time, and I always found him quite a difficult person to understand, the real person, when I first met him.
Yeah.
And I think he's really grown into himself.
And he that was sounds like a primary school teacher report. That's lovely.
So, but
very
I did,
shy when he joined
I
the
did,
class.
It was nice to see him again, and it felt like more of a regular person, not just someone hiding behind his characters. And
some comics are so crazy and they're younger, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I feel like they do.
I think it's a difficult thing to get in. You know, I think like if you're really fixated on comedy, I think it's, you're not necessarily as great with the other stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. It does make you odd.
And you sort of, and then when you're young, you're really focused on thinking, oh, I want to get to where I'm going to get to.
Yeah.
And then you get there and you go, oh, it wasn't what I imagined.
Sarah and me always say, wherever you get to, you're still there with yourself.
That's true.
So if there's any problems, if you're having, like, it doesn't make them go away. It's still you. So if you've been a dick, it's still you being a dick.
Yeah,
but
all right.
Like, but I think that's really important to remember.
True. It is.
Like, it's still you.
But, like, all your lot seem to be a
your
lot more...
Your lot? What's
your
my lot?
All your lot. You women. No, all your...
Bleeding everywhere.
your generation of comedians who are... There is a little gang of comedians like you and Sarah and all that. There's a, which is a tight-knit group, but you seem more sane on the
think?
Whole. I think than certainly the generation preceding mine and possibly my generation a bit.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I sometimes think it goes in... ways. Like, I sometimes think, I do think there's a certain definitely group of like female comics that are very nice, yeah, and we make a big
effort.
And there
are some
men
in that group as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, because you said you women.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But that was making a kind of joke there.
The patriarchy. It's hard to tell
just
when the patriarchy is joking.
The last week are in the front row again. the people watching at home will know what I'm talking about.
Aggressive women.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. I love comedy so much, and I did want to be a serious actor. Like, I was always obsessed with comedy as a child. I never took it seriously because I didn't know you could do this bit. I knew stand up was a job. I didn't know like not doing stand up was also possible to do comedy. Nobody told me that at school. So I think it took me so long to get here, and it was hard. That I'm just happy to be here rather than.
Yeah, well, that's good. But I think that's part of the reason. It's much more like, it's like you have to make career decisions now, and you have to go. Yeah. There's so much competition, and there's, you know, you go to Edinburgh and it's 800 people rather than 50 people.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you've got to stand out.
And it costs you like 10 grand.
So you've got to want to do it to the extent that you might have 10, 15 years of living in poverty.
Yeah.
And so that means the people who come out the other end probably are either crazy or very driven.
Yeah, there's still crazy ones. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just think it just makes you much more. I had so many rejections for so long that when anyone like the Peep Show thing, I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's so amazing. Like, so I just think, oh, it's so nice. It's so good. Who knows what happened next? But just enjoy this moment. Like.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to go quite well. That is my prediction.
I hope so. This is peak. This is peak.
You won't do better than this. No. Than a slightly bamboozled audience at 5 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon looking at you.
Who have no idea who I am.
What's going on?
4D Peep Show, guys.
They don't seem to know who I am. That's I think they might have just come to see Stickman beforehand and got confused. There's a lot of 5-year-old children in the audience.
We had that yesterday for Ostentatious. We had lots of kids in.
Yeah.
And the title we got was Shag and Shagability. So straight away we were like, ah, Lord Shag. How are you? That's the only time we're going to reference it. His name is Lord Shag. That's all we need to do. Yeah, we had like two kids in the front row. Yeah. And when we said Shag and Shagability, they went, oh! Like that. It was very sweet but terrifying.
When I did my play Excavating Rita, in which I was naked partway through the show. Yeah, I did a full frontal nude scene that I wrote for myself.
Who would write themselves these?
When I'm a writer, I didn't know I was definitely going to be playing the part, but also as a writer, I think
I could do it. Somebody needs me to.
As a writer, that's really important. But then when it came to me as an actor, I said to the director, yeah, I don't have to be completely naked, though. And the director said, yes, you do, though. I had my socks on. But I did it. It was rake seating in the audience.
Yeah.
It was in the Pleasance above or upstairs. There were like 2 8-year-old girls sitting at my cock level.
Cock level, yeah.
That was.
What did you do? You just
had to carry on. I'm a professional actor.
Were they? When we were at school, we got taken to see The Back Eye, and we had to go like to Reading, which was like we had to get this train journey because we were studying it for theatres, but it was the only place in London doing it. So we all got sent there, and they did a 90s raver version of The Back Eye, and so they were all on drugs. Because they talk about, in the background, they talk about ecstasy a lot. They use that word. So they'd obviously gone... And the man, Pentheus, oh my God, Pentheus in the story gets his head ripped off by his own mother because she's so high on this bacchanalian fury. It's laugh a minute with me, guys. And he came out completely naked, the actor. Yeah. But it was like a sort of fringe production, like amateur dramatic. And it was like 10 girls doing this. So I didn't go to a girls' school. It was just only... And we all screamed. And then we laughed... For 20 minutes, because we just couldn't get it together, and we were literally like going, like shoulders shaking, weeping. Hannah had to leave the room, and they were. I feel so bad. Yeah. And afterwards, we found out the director was sitting behind us, and she was like, "Shame on you! It's theatre. I don't know why you acted like that." And we were like, "He was naked," and he was like, "Because he was dancing around."
Yeah.
So it was sort of like it was more like something from Bottom than it was like from. So it was just like waggling it around. It was so shocking.
Yeah.
I would have reacted like that at your show.
Well, these girls were very impressed with this.
I love them. You care? Check it out, ladies.
They did not laugh. One moment throughout the whole play. They were so impressed they couldn't even laugh before that bit.
I wish I'd have seen it. It would have been great.
Well,
I would have screamed.
I'll do it for you backstage.
I'll get my Christmas elf outfit. We can do the both plays.
That's what I was after. So look, we're going to have to... We're going to have to go and leave this now because we have to do another one in a minute.
That's okay.
Oh.
I've waffled on.
It's been. It's really. You genuinely are one of my favourite actors and improvisers, and it's great.
What other improvisers do you know?
Well, I know Paul Merton and Paul Merton. Josie Lawrence.
Yep.
And
who else do you know, Rich?
Know a lot of the ostentatious guys. I know quite. I do set lists, which is an improvised thing.
So I've done that.
Yeah, it's good. I enjoyed that. It's terrifying.
Really, I found it really scary.
Well, but you don't really do stand up.
No, I don't at all. So they asked me to do it, and they said do it in character, and I was like, I can't. My characters don't. They're like in their world, so I just did it as myself. I got drunk and did it as myself.
Right.
It was all right.
Yeah, good. I'm sure. Well, you know, you're very. You know, you can improvise, can't you?
I can. Yeah.
I should learn to do that. So. This is the 99th episode of
is
this.
It? Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah.
You've got 99 podcasts, but fill in the rest.
And then I've got a Richard Bacon one. So thank you very much. Give a massive round of applause to Gary and Lloyd Logan.
Thank you.
Thank you. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Carriot Lloyd. The music you are listening to is by Pest. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, also to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, also to everyone at Go Faster Stripe, also everyone who listens, and all my friends at home and from school. It was produced by Dave Cripp. It's Go Faster Stripe, Fuzz, and Sky Potato Production. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, why not buy some of my DVDs at gofasterstripe.com. My latest one is called Lord of the Dance Seti and is very, very funny. But then nearly all of them are up there at gofasterstripe.com plus some of my books. If you buy those, then half the money will go to me and half the money will go to Chris Evans. Not that one. He'll just spend it on making more brilliant comedy of obscure comedians who can't get DVD deals. So everyone's a winner. Thanks for listening. See you next week for the final episode of the series of Ruh-Hur-Lur-Stur-Pur. Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.